progress will always come from Demos, from we the people.
Greece has made a tremendous comeback. We've worked with them very closely.
The United States recognizes only one legitimate government of the Republic of Cyprus.
Nothing can break the spirit of the Greek people.
Long live the friendship between Greece and the United States of America. Ευχαριστώ. Thank you very much.
I'm Thanos Lavelis, and this is The Greek Current. Over the last decade, we've gotten used to Congress driving policy on the East Med. Yet since President Trump's inauguration in January, all eyes have been on the executive. We're bringing Andy Zemanidis, HALC's executive director, on today to see how Congress, on the heels of passing Trump's big, beautiful bill, is stepping back in the spotlight. Andy, great to have you on with us.
Great to be back, Thano.
Andy, this week was a busy one, to say the least, on the Hill, with Greece and Cyprus back on the agenda. Was this, you know, the big, beautiful week for Hellenic issues?
Oh, yes. That's a good one. Yeah, after that landmark legislation, now we get to focus on issues. And summer is typically busy because you have the NDAA, you have the appropriations processes that they've been a little pushed back because of the one big beautiful bill. So we've had lots of legislation that was introduced this week. We also had the next step in Kimberly Guilfoyle's process to become the next U.S. ambassador to Greece. She came one step closer, almost a foregone conclusion right now. And you had development to the region.
Let's dive into the legislation and start with Greece, because we saw members of Congress introduce the U.S.-Greece Security Cooperation Reporting Act. Tell us all about this.
So this is legislation that is drafted by Congresswoman Grace Meng of New York. She actually had introduced this legislation before, 2 years ago. And this legislation is meant to get the administration to report on how well the bases, or how important of a role the bases that were covered in the last mutual defense cooperation agreement between the U.S. and Greece have performed. Now, let's recall that that agreement was signed at the end of 21. So before Russia's invasion of Ukraine and before the war in the Middle East broke out with Hamas's terrorist attacks of October 7th. I don't think when that agreement was signed, and Nikos Dendias, who is now the defense minister, was then foreign minister, no one anticipated those two major events. And these Greek bases, and especially in the north, Alexandroupolis, which you've covered on this podcast all the time, and on the south, in Souda Bay, they've played key roles. Souda in evacuating American citizens, in the actions against the Houthis in the Red Sea, in stabilizing the Mediterranean coast. I mean, the Mediterranean is right now an active battlefield in Gaza, in Syria, in Libya, in Lebanon to some extent. And Alexandroupolis, as we've discussed before, has been key to supporting Ukraine and on the energy front, to making sure parts of Southeast Europe and Eastern Europe do not freeze in the winter. So the Congresswoman, right now, let's fast forward to this legislation, because at the end of this year, you're going to have to start renegotiating the extension provided in the MDCA, because it's a 5-year basing rights. Those expire in 26. And the Congresswoman is, along with Congressman Bill Arrakis and Congresswoman Maliotakis and Titus, the Hellenic Caucus is coming in saying, you know what? We want to know how well these bases have performed. We want to know what additional investment it may require to take Alexandroupolis to the next level. Again, because Alexandroupolis' geostrategic significance is so much greater than it was when the last agreement was signed. And we want to look at our other bases under consideration. If we recall that in 21, there was some discussion about a base in the central Aegean, specifically on the island of Skyros. Greece, in the 5-year period, has also invested a lot more in these bases. This MDCA has turned out to be one of the greatest returns on an investment, because the U.S. didn't invest a lot and has gotten a huge bang for the buck. And I think Congress wants a deeper analysis here.
And it sounds like this is setting the stage for the next 5, even to 10 years of a U.S. presence in Greece.
Maybe beyond. Those bases could be extended indefinitely, but this also gives Greece tremendous leverage. If the U.S. wants an indefinite extension, Greece can ask, well, what more are you going to put into these bases? Are you going to give us another base? Remember the Skiros debate. Greece wanted a U.S. base in Skiros as part of the frigate deal. Then France got the frigate deal in part because it gave security guarantees. So this is going to be a very interesting conversation. Greece has not tipped its hand about what it additionally may be asking for, but it definitely has an opportunity and leverage here to ask for something else.
Another interesting conversation, Andy, that seems to be ongoing is the relationship between the United States and Cyprus. And Cyprus was also on the agenda on the Hill this week. What are you following here?
So right now, as we're recording, there are the talks in New York on the Cyprus reunification process. Don't expect anything big there. Maybe some confidence-building measures. But when it comes to the Turkish Cypriot leader, there's doubt that Erdogan will let him even survive another term. But on the Hill, specifically, they're keeping an eye on that. But they've also reintroduced the End of Cyprus Arms Embargo Act. This is something, again, Congress has been working on for a decade, and they've chipped away at it. As we know, the arms embargo has been completely removed legislatively, but it still depends on these annual waivers. And even though every year for the last 5 years we've been getting that annual waiver, it does make it hard for the Republic of Cyprus to plan and do long-term purchases of U.S. weapons. And the harder that gets, we're kind of delaying the deepening of the security relationship. The security relationship is getting stronger and deeper every day, but that process probably could take a great leap forward if instead of going from a one-year extension period, you're going to a five-year extension period. And that's what this legislation does. Before the July 4th break, Senator Booker of New Jersey and Senator Moran of Kansas introduced a Senate counterpart. So there's the fact that this legislation is both in the Senate, in the House, is going to create some momentum, and we may see some action, for example, as an amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act. But this is going in the right direction. It shows that the bilateral relationship is taking yet another step. We may have even more. You know, we're coming up to, we're hearing nothing but good news about Cyprus entering the visa waiver program. So this is really another plus in that bilateral relationship.
And I think important to note that when the embargo was first lifted, we were looking at a region that was drastically different. It was pre-Russia's invasion of Ukraine, just like with the MDCA in 2021, before, obviously, October 7th. Do you see all of these changes giving a new impetus to getting this bill over the finish line?
Yeah, absolutely. Because even when the embargo was first lifted, there were some conditions about Cyprus doing stuff on anti-money laundering or denying port visits to Russia. And for some, that was a hubbub. How can you demand that of Cyprus? But Cyprus did do it. And Cyprus has met the conditions in the original lifting of the arms embargo again and again and again. Has it broken with Russia, has shown itself to be truly a unquestionable frontline ally for Western interests, has set up other infrastructure, whether it's giving the U.S. greater basing rights in Paphos, or playing that key role in the humanitarian corridor to Gaza, the Cyclops Center. The questions that existed about Cyprus when this effort started 10 years ago just do not exist today.
I want to shift gears a bit, Andy, and turn to the Senate, where the Foreign Relations Committee just approved Kimberly Guilfoyle's nomination, as you mentioned, and her approval is likely to happen sooner rather than later, and she'll end up in Athens probably at the end of the summer. Ms. Guilfoyle is following two ambassadors, Jeffrey Pyatt and George Tsounis, who did leave a mark in Greece. I guess I don't want to see what your expectations are because it's difficult to ask that, but what's a word of advice that maybe Ms. Guilfoyle should hear?
She's taking the baton. If this is a relay, you know, Jeff Pyatt gave George Tsounis a pretty big lead. He handed him the baton in full stride. Tsounis is doing the same, or did the same, to Kimberly Guilfoyle. She has a pretty strong embassy team that I think is more critical than ever, especially after the State Department firings And even though the State Department says, you know, we are just giving everything to the regional bureaus, you know, that's a legitimate governing philosophy. But even the regional bureau that an Ambassador Guilfoyle will have to rely on has been gutted. There hasn't been a 3+1 desk officer for a while. The last two principal deputy assistant secretary of states dealing with this region, both gone. The DAS dealing specifically with Greece. Now, fortunately, he's going over to the embassy in Athens, but is gone. So the infrastructure back home, there's a real question of who knows the region. And at the same time, even though she spoke swimmingly about her relationship with the U.S. ambassador in Turkey, Tom Barrett, he's taking positions that really don't gel. They do not gel at all with the positions or the inclinations that Kimberly Guilfoyle expressed before the committee. Here's an easy one. The F-35s to Turkey. Kimberly Guilfoyle testified when she got asked that, hey, you got to make choices in this world. Turkey chose Russia. Tom Barrack, he gave an interview basically blaming Congress for Turkey choosing Russia. Kimberly Guilfoyle talking about, you got to come through for the ally that's always been consistent and come through for you, talking about Greece. Tom Barrack saying, yeah, you know, we really haven't shown the love to Turkey. So in the absence of an assistant secretary of state for Europe, which we don't know, in the absence of the president specifically laying out a vision for this region, we have a little bit of dissonance. Kimberly Guilfoyle and Tom Barrack are not saying the same thing. And she's going to have to fight in whatever is left of this interagency process to make sure U.S. policy reflects what she said during her confirmation hearing.
Well, this dissonance, Andy, that you're talking about between the U.S. ambassador in Ankara and Ms. Guilfoyle has gotten Tom Barrack some bad press, I would say, in the Greek world. And it seems he's raising the ire of Kurds, Armenians, and others as well. What worries you about Barrack's performance in both Turkey and Syria now and beyond?
Well, in Syria specifically, you know, and looking at Syria and saying that Jolani, he can call him al-Shaa, he can call him whatever he is. That guy's he's a terrorist that they put a suit on. And his name is Jolani. He's a poster child of hope. Is that's just a wow comment. We've seen it again this week with what they've done to the Druze. And there are comments that come. He gave an interview where he made it sound, well, we really don't owe the Kurds what they think we owe them. The Kurds bled for the United States. They bled for the West. When we did not want to send, and this is very important also for President Trump, who does want to end forever wars, war is just, unfortunately, is part of human nature. So if our allies think we'll let them bleed and then we'll cut them loose, I think that's a very bad precedent. Another wow statement this week, you know, the Armenians, you know, they have this impression that what the Turks did to them was the Armenian genocide. Actually, it's really not an impression. It's scholars are very clear on this. The Association of Genocide Scholars, it's the policy of the United States, Senate resolutions, House resolutions. The previous administration recognized it as it was a genocide. So Tom Barrack is a little bit freelancing here. I have not seen Marco Rubio or Donald Trump really endorse everything he says. So I don't know if he's trying to influence them one way or he's saying the quiet what they say quiet out loud. But it is Syria reminds me, and he's reminding me of some of the people who George W. Bush sent to Iraq after taking down Saddam Hussein. And I remember former U.S. Ambassador Peter Galbraith, when he was talking about how difficult it would be to keep post-war Iraq together, he made this observation. God didn't create Iraq. Winston Churchill did. Syria, there is not this Syria, this natural Syria. Syria has a lot of tribes, has a lot of communities. They're not of the same religion. And to sit there and say there's a stable, Jelani is promoting a stable Syria, when one of the first things he did was rename it the Syrian Arab Republic or the Arab Republic of Syria. Well, go ask the Kurds, the Christians, and the Druze how they feel about that. That's not the poster child for stability.
Andy, always great chatting. Thanks for joining us.
I think we'll have a lot more fun the rest of this summer.
Taking us to our headlines for the day, Libya continues asserting its maritime claims in the Eastern Mediterranean against Greece through UN submissions, despite Athens' attempts to improve bilateral relations. Libya's government of national unity, the GNU, which operates as Turkey's proxy, remains heavily dependent on Ankara's support. The combined effect of Libya's UN-published maps and Turkey's submissions creates a clear strategic pattern, one of encircling Cyprus and Greek islands and challenging Greek and Cypriot maritime claims in the region. Finally, a bipartisan initiative is gaining momentum in the U.S. Congress to prevent Turkey from lifting CATSA sanctions and rejoining the F-35 fighter jet program. A letter is circulating in the House aiming to rally broad support before being sent to Secretary of State Marco Rubio. The initiative follows recent remarks by Turkish President Erdogan at the NATO summit, where he confirmed that technical talks with the U.S. to re-enter the F-35 program had begun. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.